Aloha, everyone, and welcome to Going Shamanic. My name is Jennifer Ingracio, and my medicine name is Snowhawk. And I'm your host for this show on traditional Chinese medicine tonight. This show is pre-recorded, so we won't be taking any callers. Traditional Chinese medicine is a complete medical system, thousands of years old, that takes a deep understanding of the laws and patterns of nature and applies them to the human body. Traditional Chinese medicine is holistic in its approach, viewing the body, the mind, the spirit, and the emotions as an integrated whole, rather than disconnected parts to be treated separately. It also includes preventative medicine, which is designed to prevent the body from getting sick. Some of the treatment modalities used in this comprehensive system include acupuncture, herbal therapy, foods for healing, and the psychology of emotions and their relationship to the internal organ system. Wikipedia explains traditional Chinese medicine and speaks about it this way. Quote, one of the basic tenets of TCM holds that the body's vital energy, or qi, circulates through channels called meridians that have branches connected to bodily organs and functions. Traditional Chinese medicine's view of the body places little emphasis on anatomical structures, but is mainly concerned with the identification of functional entities which regulate digestion, breathing, aging, etc. While health is perceived as a harmonious interaction of these entities and the outside world, disease is interpreted as disharmony in the interaction. TCM diagnoses aim to trace symptoms to patterns of underlying disharmony by measuring the pulse, inspecting the tongue, skin, eyes, and looking at the eating and sleeping habits of the person, as well as many other things. Our guest today is Dr. Tanya Ji. She's been practicing traditional Chinese medicine for 20 years. She inspires her patients to seek health and wellness through a holistic practice of TCM. As a graduate of the International College of Traditional Chinese Medicine in Vancouver, BC, she completed her postgraduate studies in clinical practice in China. Tanya holds the highest rank of her profession in the province of British Columbia as a registered doctor of traditional Chinese medicine, and we welcome her today. Hi, Tanya.
Hi, Jan. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, it's good to have you on the show. I've known you for a lot of years, and of course, I met you first when you were doing some education programs at the school that I worked with the kids. But I'm curious, I don't know if I've ever heard the story of how you got into traditional Chinese medicine all those years ago.
Oh, that's a good story. That's a great story.
We like stories on this show.
You know, if you were to describe me in a simplistic version, I would say that I am a storyteller and a belly laugher. For me, that's good medicine. We learn through storytelling, we get inspired by storytelling, and we become healed by the release of energy through belly laughing. So thank you for this invite. I'm excited to share. And how did I get into traditional Chinese medicine? It's actually destiny. I'm a firm believer that everything happens for a reason. And back in the day, I had suffered a car accident and I'd injured my back badly. I'd herniated a disc to the point where I could barely walk. It was so painful. And I had tried chiropractic care, physiotherapy, and massage therapy. Those were the modalities that my Western doctor had suggested for me. And I wasn't getting any better. I also was given anti-inflammatories and muscle relaxants that just made me feel ill. I felt tired and I felt sluggish. And I thought, wow, is this what my life is going to be? And it wasn't until someone suggested, why don't you try acupuncture? And it just so happened to be the same day that the physiotherapist that I saw suggested the same thing. And I thought, how odd that two people in the same day would recommend the same thing. And it just so happens that my friend is a chiropractor and he had a beautiful woman sharing space with him by the name of Lina Ho, and she was an acupuncturist there. He said, you should go see Lina. So I said, why not? So I went, and what was funny about this first meeting is Lina is from Shanghai, China, where I did my postgraduate study, and she could barely speak English. And I was a motor mouth at the time. I was completely unconscious of my speech. So I would share with her my drama of being in pain, what happened to me, and how much I was suffering. And she just sat there and stared at me and kept saying, without actually understanding a word I was saying. But what she was observing was the energy about me. She knew I was in pain, and she knew I was in an agitated state. She could observe the pitch of my speech and knew that I was hurting. She palpated my physical body to know where the tension was. She took my pulse, looked at my tongue. She knew from that the internal disharmonies inside of me that were also aggravated and causing me more pain. So my very first acupuncture treatment, which was an amazing experience because I'd never experienced acupuncture before, I was pain-free for 4 hours, which I hadn't been for almost a year. And that was without taking any drugs or medication. Of course, I was hooked. So I came back. Within 8 treatments, I was 75 to 80% better, enough to go back to work. And I hadn't been at work for 4 months. And at the time, I was working at Science World, where I was managing a gallery there and also doing performances, which was physically challenging. So to make a long story short, 8 treatments later, I was back to work. I was in minimal to no pain, and it resolved. The pain resolved itself within the next month or so. Mm-hmm. So that was really amazing. And I said, I have to learn this. This is my ancestral medicine. This is my culture. This is where I came from. This is where my DNA is from. And I remember Lina, who, you know, several months later, English was remarkably better because she was taking classes. She laughed at me and she said, Tanya, I didn't understand you when I first met you. But what I knew about you is that you have a good heart. And she said, if you want to learn this, it requires dedication, devotion, and a lot of hard work. So she said, if you want to do it, you can do it. Just be prepared to work. And to make a long story short, she turns out to be one of the teachers in the College of Traditional Chinese Medicine, which is a specialized school. And I went and I got in, and the rest is history. It has been an absolute delight ever since then, right from day one. I have never tired from this. Every day is so interesting. I'm always in awe at what this medicine can do, what it can reveal, and what it can create. So I feel blessed. That was one of many serendipitous things that happened to me, and it was all within the divine path.
So that's interesting, because you come from a Chinese family. You had never had any kind of... like your family didn't practice Chinese medicine or go to Chinese medicine doctors, or what was the disconnect for you, do you think?
That's a great question, Jen. I found out that my maternal grandmother, she actually grew herbs, and she knew something about herbs. And that cultural practice was lost because my mother and my father... they were born speaking English, and they integrated into this Western culture because that was part of their upbringing. My grandparents did not. So there was a cultural language change when my parents were born. And then when my parents had us, we were already completely Canadianized. Jan, I used to, McDonald's was a treat on Fridays. Mm-hmm. I grew up eating Kraft dinner. And completely craving Kentucky Fried Chicken. But of course, those practices changed as I learned more about holistic care, then I know I'm, I haven't eaten that for decades now, decades. So that's how I lost it. It was just through circumstance, and it was definitely a lost practice, but it has been refound.
Mm-hmm. It's interesting to me how the ancestral pieces do filter down, even if they skip a generation. Because the same thing for me when I started practicing shamanism, I thought, well, you know, that's a really big change from Catholicism. But, and my parents did think it was kind of weird at the beginning. you know, they thought I was joining a cult or something, which of course I wasn't. But as they started to understand what I was doing, they were like, oh, your grandma, you know, your great grandma used to do this, this, and that. And people used to go see her for these types of things. And I was like, well, yeah, it just skipped a couple generations, but really, those earth-based practices are all over the world and in all cultures, really.
You know, thank you for bringing that up, because in my studies, every culture has its shamanic practice, right? Mm. And I had gone to, quick side note, I'd gone to a funeral. It was a Catholic funeral, and I observed. And what was the priest doing? He was throwing or casting holy water onto the casket, and they were burning frankincense as they were carrying the casket down the aisle, and he was chanting prayers. And then I had gone to a Tibetan Buddhist blessing, and what did they cast on me? Holy water. Mm. And what were they using? They were burning incense, and I was being blessed with the use of mantras. And then I went to a First Nations circle, as you know, you're familiar with that, and they used cedar branch with water, and they brushed me. And then they used sage, the smoke, and cleansed me. And then we chanted. And I thought, wow, three different cultures all having the same beautiful intention, same practices, just slightly different. That's beautiful. So even in the traditional Chinese medicine, I met a wonderful woman who was studying. She found access to ancient scrolls that had an ancient Chinese characters. And she's an expert in the deciphering of these characters. And what she found was very interesting. She found these scrolls that described the process on how to create a sacred space for women who are giving birth. And it had clear instructions. They were to burn sage in a copper pot to be placed under the bed of the woman who was giving birth. Why? Because when a woman gives birth, she's at her ultimate vulnerability. And the sage was to cast away evil spirits, because in the traditional Chinese medicine, there is a mention. There is a mention of the concept of spirits, evil and good, positive and negative, yin and yang. And the practitioner who was assisting the woman on giving birth was to also do a prayer, a blessing, to protect the mother and to protect the baby. Isn't that amazing? Mm. This is thousands of years old. So there is definitely a shamanic root to traditional Chinese medicine.
Yeah, talk a little bit more about that, because, you know, I remember before I started studying shamanic practice pretty intently, I actually started out studying Taoism. And that whole system of practice really resonated with me. And when I started studying shamanism, of course, I was like, that's why it resonated with me. So I'm wondering if you can talk a little bit about the two and how they're connected to traditional Chinese medicine.
You're talking about, well, I can share from my personal experience.
Mm-hmm.
So in traditional Chinese medicine back thousands of years, the healer of the community, which we used to call the barefoot practitioners or barefoot doctors, they would be paid if the community was well. So it was their sole responsibility to keep the community well. Mm-hmm. And that was beyond the physical. It was also to create harmony in the relationships. So the practitioner was kind of like the wise woman it was mostly men that did this, the wise man, the holy man, the one that was the keeper of the wisdom and keeper of the harmony. So this person would also know and have very beautiful relationships with the herbs, which he knew where they were. So they would be all over the mountainside, and he would collect them fresh for anyone who was ill. The other thing that they don't talk about so much was the divination. So they would use sticks, or they would use coins to do I Ching. And the I Ching and the Tao were rolled into one. It was a philosophy. So they were able to do divination to offer the patient or the family of the community guidance to create, of course, peace and harmony and balance. So, you know, when I started to study this, I asked why I was ignorant. Why is this information, why did it become not available? And it was because of the government changes in China. Once it became very communist, the information was suppressed and a lot of it was destroyed. However, what's fascinating about this, Jen, is that the more conscious our humanity becomes, the more in tune and alignment to divinity we become. Mm-hmm. And through this alignment, information comes forward. Why? Because there's a collective consciousness. So those who are meditative, who have acquired skills through devotion, may receive, not all, this information, this ancient information, and it's resurfacing. I personally had some experiences in the past, and that involved visions through doing my work in the clinical practice, and I was confused because I didn't know how to decipher or this information I was receiving. It was all new to me, and this is the roots of my Buddhist journey. And through meditation and attention and breath and consciousness, I started to receive information about how to best serve the patients. So what I know, oh my gosh, I think I'm going on a tangent here, Jen. I'm so sorry. What I know to be true is that to cultivate health and wellness, we can receive beautiful guidance from the Tao, which is a philosophy about balance, how to right a wrong, how to come back to center, how to acknowledge your mistakes, how to rectify, how to create humility and grace, and understand that there is a divine plan that unfolds in everybody's life. And it's how to be in this world with that information. And how can we be kind? How can we be compassionate, not only to ourselves, but to others? So traditional Chinese medicine is all this. It's all about balance, yin, yang, creating balance and harmony. And so the Tao.
Sorry, go on.
No, I was just going to say, so all the tools, right?
I just wanted to say or ask, because what you're saying, you know, if you go to an allopathic doctor here, They're more concerned about the science, your body, your symptoms. And so the spiritual realms are not really anything that they deal with. But it sounds like what you're saying is that traditional Chinese medicine can also be part of somebody's spiritual journey. So it can at times. I know, you know, when I started doing acupuncture with you, and I would go on a total journey when I was on the table. And I experienced that later, you know, when I started studying shamanism as, oh, this is like a journey into the spirit world. So I'm wondering how many of your clients come to you also because they're looking for that spiritual aspect of themselves to awaken. And how does traditional Chinese medicine help with that?
That's a fantastic question, Janet. I love it. I think that, first of all, I need to qualify by saying that the healing that is offered in this type of setting is personal to the patient and the practitioner, true to their beliefs. If they were to believe that they're humble and here to serve, then the energy that flows through me, not from me. So I personally believe that I serve, as opposed to that I am great. I serve. And the energy flows through me, not from me. Having said that, the people that come, if they have a journey on the table like yourself, that was already present within you. My job is to create the safe environment for you to do that, to be respectful of your energy, and to attune it in the way that creates balance. And once you're in balance, that's when the magic happens, Jen. That's when the magic happens. And it's not necessarily predictable. I really think that divine timing is in effect. I've had people share with me deep emotional journeys they've been on the table, but it's also reflective of who they are in this world. For you, Jen, this has always been your destiny. The shamanic practice, the connection to the divine has always been there for you. You have never been disconnected, as I believe no one is ever disconnected. And so if you had a beautiful journey on the table, that was just because it was perfect timing for you. And my role was just to create the space, the container, and support you in the way for that to happen. So when some people come to me and they said they want that, but my answer back is, let's just see what happens, because I can't predict that will happen. It's really within themselves. The relationship is between the patient and divinity. My role is to support and serve.
So tell us a little bit about how acupuncture works, because that's quite a sort of a foundational part of traditional Chinese medicine. And how does it help to attune people and harmonize their bodies and their minds, spirits, hearts?
Acupuncture is a way of creating a smooth flow of life force energy in your mind, your body, your intellect, and your spirit. We believe that there are those four different realms that make up you. And what we know that influences those four realms, which is the body, the emotions, the intellect, the spirit, is this life force energy, which is called qi, Q-I, qi. And so what is qi? What is this life force energy? It's, and I want to explain this because it's, I get thrilled when I hear this. Jen, have you ever heard of that author by the name of Bruce Lipton? Dr. Mm-hmm. Bruce Lipton?
Biology of Belief?
So, yes, I met him the first year of my school, and he rocked my world, Jen, because he said that he wanted to understand what qi is. And so his understanding is that on a scientific molecular level, we have the neutron, the proton, electron, they spin in a molecule. And he said that spinning that occurs on a molecular level creates a vibration. And that vibration is called chi. And when I heard that at the most simplistic form, a light bulb went off. And I said, so acupuncture has the ability to influence the frequency of those molecules. And what do I know from a traditional Chinese philosophical perspective is that we have these energy meridians in the body. They're like highways. And the qi is like little cars. It's running through the highway. For the highways to run efficiently, it has to keep moving. If there is a stagnation like a traffic jam, then all hell breaks loose. We have chaos. We have drama. We have pain and suffering. So what acupuncture can do, it's like bringing in a rescue team and it cleans up the car accident and allows the free flow on the highway again. Another way of looking at it is like a garden hose. We have a garden hoses and hoses that run in our body. We want the energy or the water to move through it. And if there is a stagnation, such as the hose becomes tied or bunched up, the energy doesn't move. And when the energy doesn't move, there's pain and suffering and drama and chaos. So what we have to do is release and unkink the hose and allow the energy to flow again. And when the energy is moving, there is harmony. It feels good. There's flow. We want the energy to flow. So what acupuncture does is it helps to unblock blockages. We also know that if the qi is moving too fast or too slow, disharmony can occur as well. So acupuncture is a way of creating balance in the flow. If it's too fast, slow it down. If it's too slow, speed it up. If it's blocked, unblock it. And what we know after thousands and thousands of years, there are 359 spots on the body called acupuncture points that can influence this qi. And my job is to diagnose where the disharmony is, use the correct pattern points on the body to facilitate the flow and bring it right back to balance and harmony.
So if someone came to you and they'd been having neck pain for a long time, for instance, what are some of the diagnostic tools that you would use in traditional Chinese medicine to figure out where to put the needles so that you can start to clear up the car accidents?
Well, that's excellent. Well, I'm going to have to throw in a little bit of personal philosophy. So it's not 100% traditional Chinese medicine. I'm going to call it upgraded Chinese medicine. So if somebody came in with neck pain, experiential, remember everybody can be diagnosed according to body, emotion, intellect, and spirit. So if someone comes in with a neck pain, I will observe how are they sitting? What's happening to their body as they're sitting and talking to me? I'll ask them, how long have you had this for? Do you remember what happened when you got this pain? And I'm observing them. What's the sound of their voice like? Is it soft? Is it manic? That tells me clues on what's going on. Is there emotion behind this? What if it was a whiplash? Was it a whiplash? Was it traumatizing for them? What was going on in their mind at the time of the impact? How hard was the impact? I ask all these questions because it will help me to understand, what is the origin of the pain? Is the origin of the pain a musculoskeletal accident, strain, injury, or is it and/or? Is there an emotional component? Is it because someone is undergoing a conflict at work and they're strategizing to find out how to deal with this conflict, so now they're engaging in an obsessive intellect? Is this karmic? Is this a spiritual thing? Is this a belief system? Do they feel like they're not worthy and they're creating this pain? Sometimes it's all of the above. So I would say to them, is there something in your life that's a pain in the neck? And then they usually laugh. Then they all of a sudden reflect and they think, yeah, actually, I've been having this ongoing conflict with the neighbor downstairs. And then I'll ask them about that. So whatever they say, I listen very carefully. Whatever they do, I observe. And then when I get them on the table, I will have to make my point selection. If it's an emotional point or emotional root cause, I will not touch the neck. I will choose points distally. I would choose points around the wrist, Jen, that have the ability to open the heart so that whatever emotion they're holding on to can be released, because the heart feels everything. Mm-hmm. If it's musculoskeletal, they've had a car accident, I will actually get them face down and I'll go right into the neck and see what we can release. And quite often the muscles jump, which means it's been holding on to some tension. And then after that, I would create some soothing. Because sometimes they cry, you know, it's not because it hurts, it's a release. Mm-hmm. Sometimes the body shakes because in a trauma, they've absorbed the vibrational hit. Body absorbs it and it gives them an opportunity. Acupuncture is like popping a balloon. It gives them an opportunity to let something go. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it's karmic, you know, sometimes we don't know. We don't know. What if it's karmic? What if it's something that is due to a past life? Mm-hmm. What if it's that? Then we have to have some consciousness around it. Sometimes, just to qualify this, sometimes people don't heal. Sometimes they don't.
Well, one thing I love about shamanic medicine, and it sort of ties into, even though he's not into shamanic practice, but it ties into Dr. Bruce Lipton's book. He's a cellular biologist, just for the listeners that might not know. And he deals with epigenetics. So he was kind of curious about, you know, why do, you know, two people say have a predisposition towards cancer in their family or whatever, why do some people get cancer and some people don't? And so he started studying this. And what I find it really interesting as a connection to what you're saying is that a lot of our belief systems and our thoughts and our patterned ways of being create disharmony in our bodies. So if we're not willing to look at our thinking, our beliefs, the way we live, and we're not willing to change things that are causing the disharmony, then there is a good chance that the person's probably not going to heal. They might get some temporary relief, like they'll probably feel pretty good when they get off your table for a time. Because I know, you know, I had some people in my family go to see you and they felt really great after the session. But in the end, you know, it was short term because they weren't willing to make those life changes or thinking changes that they would have had to make in order for the healing to continue.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, healing takes courage. And timing is important. And I'm, you know, Jen, you and I, we're feelers, you know, we live from our hearts. I am fascinated. Well, fascination is probably not a great word. I am inspired by the human spirit because it's fearless. It's courageous. It's confident. It's divine. And you know, I think that's the truth of who we really are, don't you think? That's who we really are. And when I meet someone who has been beaten down by pain, beaten down by chaos, you know, I'm sparked by them because I say to them, you're still here. You showed up today. You woke up today, you knew you had an appointment, and you showed up. You are here breathing. You are here present. Like, how fantastic is that? That's all because the human spirit is so powerful. So I'm inspired by the human spirit. So I think, you know, I get people, I treat people at different stages of their wellness, and I am moved by the progress of people that show up beaten down, and little by little, and sometimes they have bigger leaps in their wellness because they find themselves, you know, they tap into that, their spirit. And I encourage people to have a relationship with the divine part of themselves. And sometimes that's new language, Jen, for some people. I'll need to just give an example. I have this great, funny patient. And he used to be a police officer. And, you know, some of the things he's seen is traumatizing. And he uses his humor to survive all of those things, yet his body was suffering. And to have him on my table and to hold his hand and support him to become peaceful in his heart, because his work created a service to humanity. And the things that he's seen and the things he's experienced, he can choose to let it go in this moment, and that he no longer has to hold on to it. And so what he needed at that time was permission. Mm-hmm. A permission and a safe place to do so. And you know what? You know what? He did it. Something happened in him. It was divine timing. And he was at a point in his life where I said to him, don't be on a deathbed and regret that you didn't do this sooner. I said, do it now. Consider. Do it now. I said, just understand, you showed up today. That you survived. Your spirit is strong. Choose it now. And it was so exciting to see a smile come over his face and his cheeks turn rosy, because the qi started to move. In Chinese medicine, the cheeks, the complexion is reflective of your heart. When your heart is expanded, you have rosy cheeks. There's a smile. The lips become pink. The eyes sparkle. This man started to sparkle. And he gave himself permission. How beautiful, right? Mm-hmm. Well, lo and behold, symptoms subsided. And he's been able to maintain it, right? Mm. Oh, the triumph of the human spirit. It's inspiring.
Well, we were talking last month, because we had Diane Smith on, and she's a Qigong teacher, and she was saying, kind of in a similar vein, you know, that in Qigong, the way that she teaches it, you are your own healer. So we were talking in the last show about how powerful we are as human beings, and we just don't even know that we are. So sometimes having someone or having an experience of something, because you can hear people talk about spiritual practices, and that's one way to get curious, but until you actually try something and have the experience yourself, sometimes a doorway doesn't open for you. So I think it's really great that even people that maybe don't have a spiritual practice or don't, that, you know, may not consciously be aware of that powerful inner healer that they have inside of them, come. But, you know, who would you recommend traditional Chinese medicine to? Because it seems to me that this approach to health might not resonate with everybody. Like, mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. What was your question, Jen?
Well, I guess I'm just wondering, you know, there's probably people listening out there that are, you know, trying to decide, well, would this be helpful in my life? Mm-hmm. So mm-hmm. who would you recommend traditional Chinese medicine to?
Oh, in terms I see. Of,
you know, mm-hmm. For instance, if somebody comes to you and they're really closed-minded and they are coming to you more to test you to see if this stuff works. Mm-hmm. Is traditional Chinese medicine going to be helpful to that person? Or, you know, like, I don't know if you, you know, catch what I'm trying
to say. That's a great question, Jen. You know, first I want to say that, you know, Chinese medicine is an art form. Mm. Because it is so complex yet simple, it's an art form. When I was in China doing my post-grad study, I would observe there'd be five teachers and they were all taking the pulse of the same patient and they all gave me five different pulse readings. And these five doctors also observed the tongue of the patient, which is one of our diagnostic tools, as you lovingly said. And they all saw something different. And I was confused. You know, as a graduate, I was like, whoa, whoa, whoa. Should there not be black and white, like yin yang? And they laughed. And what they shared with me in that moment, they said, there are five of us and one patient, and there is five ways to treat the patient. Mm-hmm. And each way will work, because whatever you do to affect the patient is going to have effect on the whole patient. So five different approaches. So that never left me, because of course there are really obvious ways of treating a patient, and then there's less obvious ways. Mm-hmm. It really is about the relationship between the practitioner and the patient. You know, are you trustworthy as a practitioner? Are you sensitive enough for this particular patient? Does the patient feel like they can relax? Do they trust mm-hmm. you? That's important, right? So the relationship of the practitioner is important, more so than what type of style does the practitioner have? Because if you have a good relationship with the practitioner, the patient should feel comfortable enough to say, that doesn't work, or that's painful, or can we try something else? Mm-hmm. So, you know, every practitioner should be cultivating a relationship like that, based on respect and honor with the patient. And not everyone can hear the spirit part. So if a practitioner is in tune with the patient, they'll know. Mm. And for me, it's surprising sometimes, because with this ex-police officer, I was open. I said, are you willing to hear? And he said, no. I said, oh, that's okay then. I said, that if that ever changed, let me know. He said, yeah. So I spoke in a language that he could understand.
Yeah.
Which is not so, you know, touchy-feely kind of, let's talk about Divine Mother. Let's talk about the G word. A lot of people are allergic to the word God or the word divine. So, you know, we have to be sensitive to the patient.
Yeah.
And
it's true that, you know, I would say to the people that may be listening to really go until you find a traditional Chinese medicine doctor that's a good fit, because you were my acupuncturist and my traditional Chinese medicine doctor for years in Vancouver. When I moved to Calgary, it took me years to find someone that was a good fit. I tried quite a few people. Mm-hmm. Until finally I found someone that was a good fit. And to me, this will probably be different for everybody, but to me it was important that the person had a strong spiritual connection and
yes.
had really good intuition.
Yes.
I didn't want somebody that was very mental about it. I wanted mm-hmm. somebody who could just tune into what my energy was doing and figure out intuitively how to treat me, you know, because for some of them, you know, I would go and, you know, they were treating me the same way all the time. It's like, dude, my energy isn't the same mm-hmm. as it was 2 weeks ago. You know, maybe
exactly.
the issue is the same, but mm-hmm. to do the same thing all the time wasn't working. So yeah, I think that's a really good point. Because sometimes people might try something and think, oh, well, this isn't for me, where really it's just you need to keep going. Kind of like a doctor-patient mm-hmm. relationship with your family doctor. Mm-hmm. You're not going to groove with everybody.
Mm-hmm. No, it's true, isn't it? I mean, and everyone, because everyone's an artist. You have to find the right
fit, the right frequency, the right vibration, the right connection, right? Mm-hmm. That's like, you know, I'm very particular on, you know, who I see as well. I choose my practitioners very carefully, the ones that are on my support team, my wellness team. Mm-hmm. And, you know, may I say, Jen, I think also it's really important, everything we eat, everything we drink, it goes through us. Like, it becomes us, our energy. And so I think it's, if there are practitioners who are listening, I think it's our responsibility to be the best we can be and to keep learning and to keep being inspired so we can be deeper of service to humanity. And I think that's also the key to shamanism. We're one big shamanic community that is here to serve Great Spirit, divinity, whatnot, that is within everybody. Do you agree? Do you think?
Well, I feel that the best healers, regardless of modality, that I know, are people that have a very strong connection to spirit, or mm-hmm. to the Tao, to that energy that animates all of life. Like, they have a mm-hmm. pretty active relationship with it. Now, how they practice that, how they engage with spirit, you know, varies in different ways. But if someone's not connected to spirit, if they don't have a really strong grounding to the earth, to practices mm-hmm. that are really that ground them in their physical body, then I don't know how somebody could be their most effective as a healer.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
And that's not a judgment. It's just what I've noticed. I've just noticed, you know, I've met a lot of people, and some people have a lot of really great skills, and you can tell that they're talented in certain areas. But because they're not grounded and they don't have a connection to their own spirit, and to spirit with a capital S, I don't know how to say this, but it's like they're not reaching their potential. They're not in alignment with their medicine, their own personal mm-hmm. medicine that they can bring.
Beautifully spoken.
I've noticed that just in, because I've met a lot of people that are doing alternative health things, you know, in the last 15 years or so. So it's really interesting to talk to different people to see how they do it.
Mm-hmm. Artists. We are artists.
It's true.
Yes.
Healing arts.
Healing arts. Absolutely.
Now, we're just about out of time, but I noticed when I was researching the show, I was noticing on YouTube that you have been working with palliative patients.
Yes. CCM. Oh, my.
Talk a little bit about that.
Heart expansion. Well, you know, it is, in my opinion, the most profound work to be able to serve in this level. I had two patients of mine that, this is how I got involved, that two patients of mine had been long-term patients. One was in her 80s, and she knew she was slowing down. And I asked if I could be present for her, and she said yes. And I held her hand, and she was lucid up until the last little bit. So for me to hold the hand of this beautiful woman and apply some acupuncture, and what the acupuncture did was to facilitate the flow of the chi, whatever chi she had left, because chi will leave us at the moment of death. The yin and the yang separate at the moment of death, and we expire. So what we can do is to facilitate the flow of the chi so that it's a peaceful passing. And that's the acupuncture point, but acupuncture part of palliative care. But what moves me the most is working with palliative clients, helping them to achieve, assisting them to achieve peace in their heart and as quickly as possible. Oh, Jen, you know, one of my patients, she looked at me and she said, Tanya, I've run out of time. I said, yes, you have. I said, so let go of the resentment now. And she says, I'm scared. And I said, why are you scared? She said to me, because I don't know how to be anything but resentful. And then I said, choose love now. Be here now. Choose love now. And she died hours later. But she died after she spoke to the loved ones that she needed to speak to in order to make peace, to let go of the resentment. What a gift, hey? What a gift for someone who is transitioning. What a gift that they can leave their loved ones, which is forgiveness and asking for forgiveness and to claim their power in that moment so they can leave this earth and not look back, move forward. Because I believe spirit continues. And it is these pains, the sufferings, the attachments that keep us connected to this. We need to move forward. Life does continue. So palliative care for me is, in my observation opinion, the most beautiful way for me to be of service. And I feel nothing but honor to do this work. And it's what I do on the side. You know, I have a full-time practice, but the palliative part, it is just what I do. It's my love. It's my service. You know, I just realized, Jen, that I didn't do any belly laughing tonight. You know, we've talked about some beautiful things and some profound things, and I just want to just qualify to say that many sides to my personality. So thank you for bringing out the different sides of my personality.
Well, it's interesting because I actually had that question for you at the very beginning and I didn't answer it because you answered it so beautifully at the beginning. Because whenever I think of you, I think of your laugh, your humor, your joy. And I was going to ask you about you explained a little bit at the beginning about humor's place in healing. Because to me, it always, you know, it seems to be something, and I don't know if this is true, that comes naturally to you. But it's also, you know, what makes you, I think, more effective because, you know, I've seen you talk to people when they're in pain and there's a moment where the humor is appropriate and actually lightens things so that the work mm-hmm. can happen.
Mm-hmm.
The stagnation yeah. can move.
That's exactly it. Because, you know, in my belief system, there is the presence of the ego, and the ego, in my opinion, is what keeps us attached and in a place of suffering, and it wants to keep you there. It doesn't want you to let go because it empowers it. So, you know, when someone is in pain, and I will smile when they're sharing, sometimes, not always, sometimes I'll hold their hand as they're crying, and there'll be a lull in the conversation, and I'll say something like, would you like a tissue to clear up all the snot that's coming out of your nose? And then they'll start laughing. Or I'll be like, wow, that's a whole lot of mucus. And they will laugh. And, or they'll be on the table. And, you know, it's hard to cry when you're lying down, right? And you get all stuffed up. And then I'll say, would you like to snort and swallow? That's so disgusting. And you know, I'll just do that little bit. But there's other humors, of course. That's really kind of like childish humor. But yes, you know, it's like a bubble. We have to pop the bubble every so often. Sometimes we just need to break the seriousness. And laughing aloud is so medicinal. Mm. Oh, so medicinal. And I do it every day. I have the clinics on either side of me we all know each other, and I will see them in the hallway, and they always met laughing the other day. I was in conversation and you laughed out loud, and my patients were saying, "Who is that?" And they said, "Oh, you know, that's the laughing Buddha next door." So, there's something about that girl. And I always say, "Oh gosh, I'm so sorry. You know, I'll try to keep it down." And they go, "Really?" I go, "No." It's like, no, you might as well just soundproof it, because I'm not going to stop. No, not stop. And of course, you know, the treatment rooms, they're pretty soundproofed, but they're not 100% sound. You know, I laugh out loud every day. I can't help it. And everybody hears it. And it also, I laugh out loud to cover the screams of the patients when I'm acting. Them. So, you know, the people in the waiting room, they don't get nervous. And yeah. Because that'd be bad for business, right? I'm only kidding, right? I'm
okay. Yes, she is. There's no screams. I can attest to that. Yeah. Well, Tanya, thanks so much for coming on the show and sharing some of your wisdom and knowledge with us.
Has it been an hour already? Oh, my gosh. Thank you, Jen. Oh, I'm so tickled. Thank you so much for having me.
Anytime. Now, if you want your bubble of pain popped, about Dr. Tanya D's practice, visit her website at www.drtanyag.com. That's spelled DRTANYAGEE.com. That's all one word. To find out more about Dr. Tanya, she practices in Vancouver. And there's also YouTube video links that you can check out as well if you want to hear her speaking about traditional Chinese medicine. Thank you to the producer of this show in the background there, Marielle Smith, and to all of you who have been out there lending us your ear and your time tonight. Aloha until next time.